Okay, so good evening. So three all I found pretty complicated sugyas here, all having to do with the shir challah. One of what the amount that is necessary in order to take off of challah. So one is we'll see, very, very famous, because it leads to all sorts of other scenarios. That's the Sif Aleph, and then Sif Beis and Sif Gimel are more local to Hilchos Challah. I will say off the bat, I a lot of this has to do with numbers and sort of connections, and I was not able to like work it out to total clarity on these things today. But I think we have enough to get the general gist of some of the of the issues here. So the first sif is very, very prominent. So this is actually the sugya where, you know, the whole question of what the size of a kezias is and what the size of measurements and whether measurements should be different, it actually is all focused around this sif in Shulchan Aruch. This is actually sort of the ground zero for that discussion as to whether a kezias has expanded or not in the modern age, or whether the kezias has shrunk in the modern age, meaning that we that we're required to actually have that mitzvahs that require eating require a significant amount more. So all that is actually circles around this issue. So in Shin Chaf Dalet Sif Aleph, so it starts off by saying Ein Chayev Chal El Chameshes Minei Tevua, that you're only chayev to separate challah from the five grains. So those five grains are wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. Oats is a little bit of a shaila that is out there. Maybe we'll get it a little bit. Whether what the Gemara means by oats are our oats. So some have raised that question, but whatever. That's not for now. So that's simple enough. Next, the Shulchan Aruch continues on. It says Vein Chayv El Chamisha Revayim Umida Shemachzekes Mem Gimel Beitzim. So you are only required if it has five revias, which I'm not sure what that is. It's a volume metric measurement, and a mida, a measurement that is able to hold 43 1/5 beitzim. So 43 1/5 eggs. So beitza mimalim oso kemach, v'oso kemach hu shir challah. So if the bucket is able to hold 43 squared eggs, I guess you would say, right? Volume, eggs in volume. So that would be the shir challah. And then the chishim amal.
Eggs, still with the shell, or after you've unshelled them?
We're using the size with the shell. I mean, I think it's actually a machlokas whether you include the shell or not include the shell itself. But the measure is going to be the same.
Shells, it's liquid.
Right. No, but we're talking about the measure of it. It's not talking about just the size of the liquid. I mean, if you hard boil it, and you take off the shell, that's a bit of a machlokas. I mean, does the actual thickness of the shell count towards it or not? But the size of the egg is what we're talking about.
Well, it could be like, why couldn't it be just the amount of liquid that the egg displaces?
Because that's not what it's talking. That's not what it is.
A whole bunch of eggs in there.
Yeah, no, so that's not what it is. It's talking about the measure of the size of the eggs. I think it's that's the measure. Meaning you have a. You have an olive, and then you have an egg that's larger. We're not talking about a crushed olive or the equivalent of the liquid olive. It's talking about the size of an olive. So essentially, we're talking about the size of an egg. So now, eggs could be many different sizes. We're used to large, you know, the eggs that you buy in the store are large eggs. Apparently, Rabbi Cohn here has in his book here that there are actually six measures of eggs that we have. The USDA grades eggs into six sizes: jumbo, extra large, large, medium, small, and peewee. So the large one is the most common, not just because that's what you find in the supermarket, but that is what is the most common. The smaller ones, you don't even see, you know, you see jumbo eggs for sale or extra large for sale in the supermarket. Smaller ones are not found for sale. Those generally are sent off and made into mayonnaise. And other, you know, those are used commercially. They're not going to be available as eggs in the store. Fine.
I've seen medium.
You've seen medium. Okay. So, v'shem amalim hamida kamach tiyamachokek v'lo gedusha, right? So that you figure out that the measure of the wheat that's just sitting there, not like crushed together. V'yach yisharu l'dashi machsekes mem gilim beitzim v'chomesh nisvar b'tur. How to figure that out, you can find in the tour. U'mishkal chamesh rebeim kamach hu tuf kuf chaf Darum Mikemach Chitim Sheb Mitzrayim. It's, I don't know, 520 durum. Another is a weight measurement from the kemach of the wheat that is found in Mitzrayim. Okay, so that is the measure here. Now, first of all, just what is it based on? I could have put this on the sheet here, but the Gemara in Maseches Eruvin tells us that this is actually a cheshbon based, trying to cheshbon out the amount that was used for mun in the desert. So this was considered to be the daily amount of mun. In fact, the Gemara continues on to say that if you eat that amount of wheat a day, that's considered to be a healthy amount of wheat to eat. I don't know, that seems like a very high-carb diet to me. We're talking about a significant amount of wheat. Even if you're going to use the lower shear, we're talking about 2.5 pounds of flour, right? So that is a lot. But anyways, that is that's what the Gemara says. I'm not quite sure how to understand that as being the standard amount over the course of the day. But anyways, that is the measure that the Shulchan Aruch gives, 43 1/5 eggs.
Yeah, but if you didn't think you'd
offer. What? Someone...
Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to mute it.
Oh. So continues on the Rama and then adds in. So Kli HaMachzik, by the way, it gives a different measure. Kli HaMachzik, by the way, the Kli should hold Eser Atzbos, Al Eser Atzbos, Berom Shalosh Atzbos V'tishiyas Etzba. That it's actually the size of the Kli then is the equivalent, being this 43 1/5 eggs, is the equivalent of a volume of 10 etzbos by 10 etzbos with a depth of 3 1/9 etzba. Bekarov hu shir chala, that's the shir chala, v'chei midi sheish b'zayin etzbos, pachos beis t'shios etzba, b'rom zayis etzbos, pachos beis t'shios etzba, hu ha'omer v'chol etzbos elu heim rochav godel shel yad. He says, and how are we measuring out these etzbos? So the etzbos are the thickness of your thumb. So from one side of your thumb to the other side of your thumb is the measure. Now, another thing that's unclear to me is, I sort of tested this out on today, meaning if you take a ruler and you flush it against your thumb to measure the thickness of your thumb, right? So the thumb, like, it will get a little wider. Right, so I'm not sure which measure it is. I mean, I have a little ruler on my phone that I put my finger down against, and it came out to about 4.5 centimeters. The assumption, Rav Moshe's tshuva on this, is that the thickness of the thumb is 4.2 centimeters. That's his assumption, and the Chazon Ish's shear is 4.3 centimeters, which is why the Chazon Ish's shear ends up being a little bit larger. Now, it doesn't sound like very much. A tenth of a centimeter does not sound very much, but when you multiply that over the size of an amma, right, so that all of a sudden can make a significant difference, right? So that's why Rav Moshe's shear for an amma ends up being like, I forget, 21 inches, I think, and the 20 1/2 inches, and the Chazon Ish's is 24 inches, so that's that measurement, meaning they're extrapolating off of the thickness of a thumb. Okay, so that is the straight reading of the Shulchan Aruch, and this is the way it's found in the Rishonim as well, is that the 43 beitzim is the equivalent of the 11 by 11 by 4 size of the etzbas etzbos, right? That they should be the same thing. I mean, the Mechaber and the Rama aren't arguing here; they're attempting to give the same shear. They're attempting to give the same measurement. So the issue, so that's the way that it was for many, many years in terms of figuring out what the different shirim are. So until we got to the mid to late 1700s, and we enter in the city of Prague. So this is one of the, I don't know, top five Nodeb Yehuda issues that are out there, and it appears in the Tzlach. The Tzlach, I believe, right, Seal Nefesh Chaya, that is a sefer on the Gemara. Oh, 1 second. Good night. Sorry, we had to get rid of one of his descendants who had entered the room. So the Tzlach here is at the very end of Maseches of Maseches Psachim. It's actually, interestingly enough, I'd always thought there's a sugya earlier in Arvei Psachim on the page before where it actually lays out one of the few times in Shas that there's actually a carryover from size to length. I mean, this is also this issue here, and that's actually where the Gemara says that a mikveh has to be a minimum of three square amos, which is the equivalent, and it gives the equivalent amount that in terms of betzas, I think. So that's a few daf earlier. And that's actually what he used as his premise, but the tzlach is actually going on a different sugya. It's actually going on the Mishnah where we recite in the Seder, where it says, Rav Gamliel haya omer, kol shelo omer gimel dvarim elu pesach lo yasa yidei chovasa. So it's on that Mishnah. And here, the tzlach comments, he says, v'hoel, v'chaviva mitzvah v'shaisa, uv'lai lezu tzrichim lechol kezayis matzah, v'chein maror, v'lishus min arba kosos revia shel Torah. He says, on this night of Pesach, so you have to eat a kezayis matzah, kezayis maror, and four reviases of wine. So tzarech ani levar, shir ha-kezayis v'shir ha-revias, so I want to figure out what is this shir, right? Masha ola daiti shenisbaro li b'mofes shehu shelo kedivya shulchan aruch. And what appeared to me, that seems to be miraculous and not like the words of Shulchan Aruch. Ki ve'emes mevur b'shulchan aruch simen tuf peivav shishir kezayis hu chatzi kebeitza. He says, because in Shulchan Aruch, if you look in Hilchos Pesach, it says that the kezayis is a half of a kebeitza. Okay, for umlam lefi, so exactly. So we have eggs. It might be that they didn't have olives. It is. I think it actually might be what he means here, meaning the shear of a kezayis is half of a beitza, and we don't have zayises. So if you want to figure out what a zayis is, so you look at what a beitza is. Right, that seems to be what is going on here. I think in the later articles about this, Nathan Slifkin has a major article on this. Others also. So he points out that olives did not really exist in Europe during that time. Right, it's very possible that Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbi Cheskel Landau, Chassam Sofer, that none of these people ever actually saw an olive. So they're doing it based off of the size of eggs. The problem is, okay, well, how big is an egg? And eggs are themselves could be fluctuate in terms of size. It says, so he says, what it seems to me, based on the size of the eggs that we find nowadays, he says, I think our eggs are actually half the size of the way the eggs were during the time of the Torah. This trick, right? Why this miraculous thing? Kishir chalahu mem gimel beitzim v'chomish. He says he figured this out when he was doing his cheshbon for the shear of chala, meaning going to our sugya, right? Where the shear chala is 43 1/5 beitzos. He says vatosus yantiv modei shehu pint. So the Tosus Yantiv lived in Krakow. So the pint apparently was a measure that existed in that part of the world, a pint. So the mem gimel beitzim v'chomesh is a pint. Mida yesha shematzasi kan bivoi leprag, right? And this is the size that came to Prague, right? So Tosus Yantiv said it's a pint, and we all know what a pint is because, you know, how else do you do business in Prague? He says, Vanima.
What? Could be a pint.
A pint, right? Could be a pint or the predecessor of a pint, yeah. So Vani madadati, so I measured, umatzasi shehu pachus mi pint. He says, so I, however, then took an egg and measured, and it came out to be less than a pint. V'shuva sisi kli ha-machzik sheva agudalim pachos beiz tashiyas ba'orich, v'roche v'rom meruba shu shir chala ha-mefurish b'shulchan aruch b'yerodaya. He says, and then I took a measure that should be, what, seven kli ha-machzik sheva agudalim pachos beiz tashiyas ba'orich, minus 2/9 in its width and length and depth, which was square. So I guess somehow that should come out around the same thing. And this measure ended up holding 2 pints, 8 zeidlichs, which is 2 pints, which ends up being double the egg. So v'im kein, so now we have a problem. Meaning this Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, where he said that the volume of a 10 by 10 by 3 finger widths is the same as 48. Is the same as, what do we say, 45? No. What's the number on the eggs? 43 1/5 eggs. Right, our Shulchan Aruch seems to be the same thing. It says they end up contradicting one another because the Ramaz version of when you measure out the finger widths ends up being twice as large as the Mechaber's version when you measure out our average size eggs. And that's the big problem. He says, not only that, v'shneim halacha l'moshe m'sinai. And both of these are based off of halacha l'moshe m'sinai, and ends up being, according to my cheshbon, says the Nodav Yehuda, that it is double the size. Kishir mem gimel beitzim v'chomish hu halacha l'moshe m'sinai, v'chein shir mikvah hu halacha l'moshe m'sinai, based on that sugya in Pesachim about six daf earlier. V'al korchach, period. So that's the Nodav Yehuda's problem. That's his problem. And it's really not his problem. Rabbi Cohn points out in his Sefer, this was several people's problems. This was already noticed. He quotes from the Avkas Rochel, who wrote the Avkas Rochel. The Avkas Rochel was written by no less than Rav Yosef Karo. That's the Shailos Tshuvos that were written by Rav Yosef Karo. I'm not sure I ever actually saw it in print, like actually held the book, until I noticed in the Kollel this past Motzei Shabbos, I saw it on the shelf, a new edition of the Avkas Rochel, which was written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. I'm not sure Rabbi Yosef Karo ever himself alludes to it in the Beis Yosef, and I just took a quick look in the introduction. He says there that the manuscript of the Avkas Rochel wasn't printed for like 250 years. So the first edition of the Avkas Rochel was only printed over 200 years after Rabbi Yosef Karo passed away, and he says there are problems, and the editor of that manuscript admits that there are problems. He says, in fact, look at this tshuva. It gives you a number where the manuscript actually says, the original printing actually says, unfortunately, we're missing three lines because it was eaten by mice. So this was bothering Rav Yosef Karo himself, going all the way back, this steery here. Of course, they didn't stop him from giving one of those shirim. So how is he going to resolve this? So, so what you have to say must be that something changed. Either shahagudalim nisgadlu vehema gedolim yoser meagadlim shai b'nei atinayim. He says either our thumbs have gotten bigger, right, and they're bigger than they were at the time of the Tanayim, o shabeitzim niskatnu v'hema bizmanenu ketanim mimasha hayu b'mei Tanayim, or the eggs got smaller, right? Either our thumbs got bigger or the eggs got smaller, right? But either way, we're going to have a problem. So v'yadua shadorus holchim umismatim. He says, and now, so which one am I going to go with? He says, well, everybody knows that the generations have diminished over time, right? That we're, right, v'yivshar, it's not possible that our thumbs are bigger than the thumbs that existed during the time of the Gemara, right? Because of Yuridas Hadoro, so therefore our fingers must be, at the very least, must be smaller, at the very most, couldn't have gotten bigger. So therefore we have to say that the eggs have gotten smaller.
I thought that was a spiritual level when you talk about this Katan Hadoros, not that they're physically smaller.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah.
If also somebody have been, then know that Yehuda's thumb may be bigger.
Well, okay, so hold on. We'll get to that. So v'alkor ha'chabitim is manin nismatu. V'alchein ani mazir sha'al pint kemach yikach ha'chala b'li bracha. He says, so therefore, I think, and this is where this whole idea of with a bracha, without a bracha started, it's coming from this Nodav Yehuda. He says, so therefore, I think that if you only have a pint of kemach, right, so you should actually do it without a bracha. I don't want to be more makil than the shear of the Tosos Yantif. I mean, I'm not going to say that we're going to say you're not chayv and chala until you have the full amount according to my cheshbon. He says, but I don't think you should make a bracha until you have at least two pints and a little bit more than two pints or pints. So the kevan shenis barer shahabitzim shalanu niskatnu almach sisam. He says, but now we turn around and say, okay, so we're keeping the thumbs the same size, but now that means that the eggs have been cut in half. So he says, in kain shir zayis shu chatzi beitza hu kebeitza shalanu. So therefore, says the Nodav Yehuda, right, a kezayis is half of a beitza, but it's not half of our beitzas, it's half of their beitzas. Right, and their beitzas are twice as big as our beitzas. So therefore, a kezias in Prague in the year 1780 should be really the size of a beitza, right? And that's where these shirim came. V'chazeh eshar v'achilas matzah, mar b'chol shirei ha-Torah. So therefore, we're going to figure out when it comes to eating matzah and maror and all the shirim, v'shirevia shel Torah al-pi midazu, hu yosir meroveya zildal shel ha-zaydol ha-yashon shematasi po kal kadosh prag. He says, and therefore, the revia should actually be more than, I don't know, the old cup or something, I don't know, that we found in Prague. Uvizaydel yish gimel revias, umaxim mi revias, shel Torah la'arach, uporta lo daikinan l'chumra, right? We're not going to, about a little bit, we're not going to be so strict on l'chumra, but it's only this large amount that we're going to be very strict about. So this is where the kezias evolved. Now, a couple interesting points. I didn't have a chance to. Rabbi Slifkin has a long essay on this. One of his chapters in Rationalism versus Mysticism is on this topic. Beyond that, he has another topic. One thing is he quotes a bunch of Rishonim that say that it shouldn't matter, meaning the shear is a kezias. The shear is not a measure that was the equivalent of a kezias. So a lot of Rishonim just say, listen, you follow the kezisim of your time. So if the kezisim of your time somehow shrunk, so then the shear also shrunk, right? He said that's one possibility that is out there. But anyways, this is the shear, and this is where we have such a wide range. This is why we have such a wide range of challah without a bracha versus challah with a bracha. Now, it isn't actually the exact amount, but what is the amount that we generally say that you have to be mafresh challah on? So we generally say a 5-pound bag of flour. That's the rule of thumb that is used. It's not exactly that. It's a little bit off, and it might be depending on which flour you use, it might be a little bit more or less than that. But anyways, it's about, well, just use that rule of thumb. What is the amount that you are chayv on challah on without a bracha? So we say it's about 2.5 pounds, right? Which is very little. I mean, comparatively, that's a very large range. I mean, and why are we saying that you double the shear? So this is why we're saying we're doubling the shear. Because in those of you who just said, I'm not going to be makel and say that you don't have to be, that you don't have to take off challah at all if it's less than if it's only going according to the old Tosos Yontif shear of pints, of one pint. So we're going to say you should continue to take off, but don't make a bracha on it until you've reached 2 pints. So that's why the shear is double in order to make a bracha is double than what you don't make a bracha on, and that's not found in Shulchan Aruch, right? That issue of that suffix is not found in Shulchan Aruch. That very large range that's emanating straight out of here, straight from this tzlach. Okay, so that is
and Bingo sells a 6-pound bag of flour
to be yotze because of this.
I don't know. I thought there's a stack of 6-pound bags there. It might be because of 2G. Sure, you have enough.
Okay, so that is the world famous tzlach. Right? The tzlach is called Tzil Nefesh Chaya. It was named for his mother, right? That was the so somebody put out a trivia question, something like name all the svarim that are named after mothers. So that's probably the most famous one. There's a few others also. The Birchas Peretz by the Stipler, I think Peretz was his mother, I think. All right, anyways, so that is number one. So it's continuing on in the source. I don't have my own actually printed out. Pull it up. So that was his shir. Now there is a famous story that is found in the Tshuva Me'ava. It's not easy to read the Tshuva Me'ava. I was able to track it down. The Tshuva Me'ava is Rav Nodav Yehuda's prime Talmud, not his son. I think his son is who wrote the Nodav Yehuda Tinyana. That would probably be his real Reb Talmud Muvak. But his Talmud Muvak that was not actually in the yeshiva is the Tshuva Me'ava of Eliezer Fleckless. So if you take a look, I think I have in the wrong order here. What I sent you, yeah. So page 5 in the source sheet. So on the bottom there, it's not easy to read. I don't know if there's a new edition, and even Otzar Chachmat did not have a new edition. But the, I don't know, let's start, about, I don't know, 10 lines from the bottom or so. He says, Kemach Michokim Uma'at Yoser. That's the first one on the line, right? V'kevin sh'nisbar sh'abitzim sh'lon niskatnu al al-mechitzi sasam imkein shir zayis shehu chatzi beitza hu kebeitza shalana, right? The shir zayis, which is half of a beitza, is like our beitza, right? V'chazeh eshar b'achilas matzah umaror v'chol shiurei ha-torah v'shir revias shel torah al-pimida zu hu yoser miruveya zaydol, right? That's the end of the tzlach. I'm not sure what that measure is. Shel zaydol ha-yashin shematzasi po kal kadosh prag u'v'zaydol yesh gemu revias u'mechza miruveya shel torah. Le arech upursa lo daikinan lechumra akan lashon. Okay, that's a direct quote from the Tzach. He says, "Aval chalil v'chalil lahakil bavur cheshbon hazeh." He says, "But you definitely shouldn't be makel on this cheshbon." Meaning, he wants says, "All right, you want to be machir, make sure you eat enough matzah. So fine, make sure you're machir and you let him and do that. But you can't be makel b'shir achilas b'shir achilas. I'm not sure what that is. Beiz yud chaf." Not sure what that is. Shehi kebeitza. Ki mem vav hagon. Ki mori virebi hagon. Told me. Nira Eli. Right? Loba lahakil al shel Torah el lachmir. He says he wasn't coming to present a kula. He was only coming to present a chumrah. Velfiyani as daisi. Three lines from the bottom. Mori virebi hagon. Chashav lefi agid al shalom. Right, his problem was that he was facing it off of his own thumbs. V'hu haya orich bedoro, and he happened to be very tall in his generation. Mishichmo umala gavoa mi'alkol gavoam. He was head and shoulders above all the tall people. Right, so he was very tall. V'agodlo haya kufel mishal adam, and his thumb was twice the size of a regular person. Right, kinodeya l'chol, as everybody knows. Now, twice the size of thumb is a pretty large thumb. That is pretty big. So continuing on to the next page here. He says, Elu umad nishtana mishar reva chabalo liodam.
Bedine Moser, no?
Yeah, this is not the right. I think I took the bottom and the top of the same page. But yeah, so, and he continues on and says, what?
Yeah, there's two pages, but you read from the second page.
No, I read from the second page, the bottom left. That was right. And then instead of doing the top right of the next page, I took the top right of the same page. So I don't have it here. But he continues on and says, so I pointed this out to Rebbe when he was describing that your thumb is much bigger than everyone else's thumbs. And he laughed, right? That's what it says. He laughed. So then there's a whole Torah about what the laugh meant, right? Was he laughing because he agreed, or was he laughing because he said, yeah, it's a good point, but still, my cheshbon that I just wrote out here in the tzlach is correct. So that is the big issue. I was able to finally track this down because there's a dissertation of the Nodu Yehuda by Rabbi Dr. David Katz that I came across. I've been printing out little by little over the last couple of months. So he has a footnote devoted to this, and there actually is a little Google search today. I came across a blog post from On the Main Line, who I still don't know who he is, and I don't think it has to do with the Main Line in Philadelphia. He's just that's the name of the thing. So he where he talks about this. This is actually the end of the blog post. The most of the blog post is talking about the stylish hats that were worn by Rabbanim in the 1700s. They weren't conservative. They actually were like the most modern, etc. And he quotes from the Hesped that Rabbi Shmuel Landau gave for his grandfather for the Nodav Yehuda, talking about how he was so tall and so good looking. So he mentioned that and said, you see, the fact that he was, which he said, is very unusual for, you know, rabbinic hespedim at the time to talk about, his looks like that. And beyond that, he points out, but he says there was halachic ramifications, and he quotes this story. Right, so that is it. In Rabbi Cohn's book here, he also adds in that there was a Jewish Action article in 2003, so that's going back a significant amount, that tries to figure out whether any of this is actually correct. Meaning, is there actually any grounds to say that there is a change of Metzius from the past? So in order to figure that out, potentially you can go to the past and see. So he quotes, apparently this is So this is very good research here. So he says, he said he brought a raya here. He says, first of all, there is a Gemara that says that Rebbe had a container that had a volume of 207 eggs, and it was a well known to be one third of a amphora. An amphora holds 9,300 cubic centimeters or something. So that indicates that the eggs at the time had a volume of 44.9 cubic centimeters, which is actually around the size of our medium-sized eggs, right? That means that the size of eggs did go down a little bit, but not half the size. And then he has another cheshbon here that a few years after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, that was when Mount Vesuvius volcano exploded, right, and buried Pompeii. So he tracked down that apparently in Pompeii, under the ash, right, they found it preserved. So one of the things they found was a bowl that contained a few whole eggs. So David Cohen said he had a mashkiach in Italy. So he contacted mashkiach in Italy and asked him if he could please go to the museum in Italy and find out the exact dimension of those eggs that were found in Pompeii. And the two eggs that they had, 39 cubic centimeters and 47 cubic centimeters, which you don't know. Those are only two eggs. They might have been like uniquely small or uniquely large, but still, nevertheless, it does give an indication that our eggs are maybe a little bit larger than the eggs that exist in those days. But it's hard to say that they're double the size. Similarly, he adds in that they also have done measures of skeletons found from different parts in history, and apparently the assumption is that people's sizes have not changed very much over the last, 3,000 years, with the exception of a 200-year period from around 1650 to 1850. For some reason, people then were significantly smaller. So it could be at that time the Nodav Yehuda was larger, but that only that he had a normal-sized finger as opposed to a very small-sized finger. He does average out. He did his own cheshbon here about the sizes of fingers, thickness of fingers. The cheshbon generally end up to be 2.2 centimeters or so, maybe a little bit larger than that. And that probably is around the same. You don't necessarily know the thickness of the thumbs, but if you know the size of the skeletons, so you could pretty much figure out that it's around the same. So he doesn't think that things have changed very much. He has in one more fascinating cheshbon here, and that from this Jewish Action article. I didn't find that article, but just his quoting of it. That apparently, if you go through the Chizkiyahu tunnels right under Yerushalayim, so there's an inscription in the middle where the two sides meet. Right, that there's a spot where the two sides meet. It's a little bit off, and the two sides meet there. So there's an inscription there that says that the tunnel is 1,200 amos in length. So in modern days, if you measure the tunnel, it comes out to 533 meters. So 1,200 amos is 28,800 etzbos. So that comes out to an etzba being 1.85 centimeters, which is too small, which is actually smaller than what we have today. But, anyways, this ends up being a large discussion, but it all emanates from this sugi here, because you have the two measurements that the Mechaber and Ramah seem to be assuming is the same, and it ends up being different, and that's what caused the Nodav Yehuda to say, this is not, this cheshbon doesn't work for us. So anyways, that's the famous Kizayas/Kibetza issue.
I think the abbreviation was Yom Tzati Purim. You're allowed to eat less than an egg.
Oh, the abbreviation where? In the
last.
Oh, from the Tshuva Me'ava?
I think it was whatever you were reading.
The Tshuva Me'ava, yeah, okay. Okay, that Nodav Yehuda, by the way, is if you look in the Pesach Tshuva, he quotes this tzach, right? I'm a shefer tzach al psachim, where he quotes the summary of that of the tzach that we did inside. That's in that Pesach Tshuva. Okay, so Sif Beis actually tries to figure out that we have these Bayes and Gimel quickly. Bayes says that there's five types of grains, so they can. So do they join together to form a shear, or do they have to stay separate? Do you need the shear challah from one of those grains, or can all five join together? So there's a whole lot of discussion here about different contradictions where it comes out to this, but we'll just do what it says in Shulchan Aruch. When the dust settles, this is what Shulchan Aruch passes. It says there's five types of grain. They join together. Shem ein b'isa el chameshes rivayim mechamishasa mitzarfim. That if they're only... if there's only this amount, Elochamishas Revayim, five Revayim from the five times, they join together. So, Medvar Mamurim, Kisha'arvan Kemach, when it's joined together as flour, meaning you have the different types of wheat, wheat, barley, oats, right? You have the five different types, they, if you mix them together and then you knead it, right? Then you knead it, so then they would join together to reach a shear. But if you measure it separately, I mean, if you knead it separately, you knead the wheat and then you separately from the barley, right? The aimbo kashir, and you don't come out with the amount, umedafko liminachir, and then you join it with something else, so aim it starfin, so then it's with a different type, so that's not going to merge together. That will not give you the shear. El bezeh seder hachitim aim it starfin, except, sort of, it does. Because he says that the chitim does join together with kusmin. I always forget which one is which. Kusmin is the wrote it down before. Kusmin is the spelt. Spelt is considered to be very weedy, so the wheat can join with spelt. Vakusmin, Elim Hakusmin. Hakusmin could actually join with the other ones. Vashiurim mitzdarfim im hakol and seorim. Right, the barley can join with all of them except for chitim. And shifun mitzarif im hasaorim, and shifun is the rye. Rye could join with barley. The kusmin and what's it called? And spelt velo im shibola shual, but not with oats. Okay, v'chitim shibola shual mitzarif im hasaorim. The kusmin velo im achitim v'shifun. Okay, so there's this cheshvan that you got to. If this comes up, you'll make sure to look it up and figure out what's allowed to join with who. According to the Rambam, he has a different, slightly different cheshbon. Now, if you do them separately and they have a shear, and you want to separate ze al ze, that you're not allowed to do. Elabimino. Meaning, I can't make a shear of barley and a shear of wheat, and then say, okay, I'm going to take off a lot of barley and leave all the wheat. That doesn't work, right? You have to take a chalo off of each. So, kaitim mafrishim chitim al shum echad mehem, below mishum echad mehem aleihem. I have a kusman v'shifun mafrishim mizah al zeh, v'chin shmol ashul v'shor mefarshim mizah al zeh. Okay, but some of them you are allowed to mix one another based on the cheshbon that we gave above. The Rama actually didn't really understand what he was changing. So, Gimel actually is a little bit more lemaisa. So, Gimel tells us chamish revayim halalu, that these five types, hasseor v'hasubin v'hamorson, mitzdarfin lahashlim im l'shein below harakeda. That what counts towards the shear. So he has a little Rabbi Cohen here has a map here, has a little diagram of the wheat shaft. There, right? You got the husk. So the husk is the outside. So that doesn't count. That's generally thrown away. And then there is bran, germ, and endosperm. Okay, so the germ is that thick thing at the bottom. Endosperm is what makes up most of the stuff. And then there's bran, is the membrane that goes around the endosperm. Okay, so now he says, so these different things, they all can count if you leave them there without crushing it. Meaning the way, if you want white, right, the white flour that we use, apparently the white flour is all from this endosperm. So they'll break it apart, and you'll only have the flour, and that will leave the other things behind. So if you leave the other things behind, only the flour itself is going to count towards the shear. So if you have a, the white flour that you buy in the store, so that's pure flour, and that will work towards the shear. Now, what about if you get whole wheat flour? So if you make whole wheat flour yourself, let's start with that. You just crush the wheat yourself, right? And you come up because you want to make whole wheat flour. So that actually would all count towards the shear, right? Aval imrikid v'hi, that's the first thing, right? So if it's all there together, right? So it merges as and equals ishir. Aval imrikid v'hifrish morsan mitochan v'chazer v'irvan imo ein mitzarif. He says, but if you extract the bran and you extract the germ and then you put it back in later, it doesn't count towards the shear. Got it? So if you have white flour counts towards the amount. The whole wheat counts towards the amount if you just crush it and grind it like that. But if you separate the bran and then you all you have is white flour, so only the white flour counts. The bran doesn't count. If you then stick the bran in later, it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch that it's not going to count. So Rabbi Cohn here, this is good wheat knowledge that he has here. He says that the way they make whole wheat nowadays, though, is that if you buy whole wheat flour in a store, it goes through the white wheat process in terms of separating everything, and then they add the bran back in. They add the whole wheat stuff, they add it back in. Why do they do that? So he says probably, in terms of a consistency issue, I mean, just that, like, that's the way the mills work, so just do it. Or he thinks it adds shelf life, because the bran apparently has a lot of enzymes in it, and the germ contains fat. So keeping the bran and germ separate from the flour allows the flour to last longer. Once it gets mixed together, so then it's going to be worse. So while it's being stored in the mill, so they'll keep it separate, and then if they want to sell whole wheat flour, they'll mix it back together. So if that's the case, so then it could be that if you make whole wheat challah, you actually need a higher shear. You need more than just the 5 pounds, because apparently the bran and the germ makes up 14% of the rest of the kernel. So if you are using whole wheat and you want to say, well, it was white wheat and then the other stuff was added back in, you would actually need 14% more in order to reach the amount of challah, in which case the 5 pounds won't be enough. That might be why you need 6 pounds. He says, but Rabbi Cohn says he thinks that it's not actually an issue based on this shach. So this shach is a little cryptic. He says, the shach says, Dariso sechem amarachmana ve'enze derech arisa la'ariv bo morson v'subin la'achar she'efrishin mina kemach. He says, why is it that if you separate the bran and put it back in, it doesn't count? Because ariso sechem, it's the pasuk says, from your arisa, what you really like to eat. So the arisa is the flour, and the other stuff is just other stuff that added back in for filler or something like that. He says, but, Rabbi Cohen suggests, if it is whole wheat, and you want it to be whole wheat, so he said that even the whole wheat then, if it's commercially made like that, that could qualify as ariso seichem. Meaning even though he bases that on a Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi there says that if you add rice, the rice could count towards the shir challah. He said, why in the world would rice count? Because that's the way it comes out to ariso seichem. That's something that you want. So if you actually are seeking the whole wheat, So then it would count, and then that would knock the shear back down to being the regular 5 pound bag, as opposed to the higher amount. So he thinks, generally speaking, you don't have to then add in. I was wondering if, let's say, you don't want to add the whole wheat, but the only way your mother will let you make challah for Shabbos is if you make whole wheat. Meaning you don't want it, but your mother wants it, right? So me, I think it's nasty to have a whole wheat bread. But my mother says I want that needs to be added in. So does that then take it out of ariso sechem and maybe fluctuate the shear somewhat? That's question A. And then a couple other questions that Rabbi Cohn raises, which he says he doesn't know if he can really answer. What about other things that are sometimes added in? So for example, gluten. So gluten is the difference between summer wheat and winter wheat, right? That summer wheat is higher in gluten. Gluten is what gives it the chewy thing. So pizza dough and the pretzel, like soft pretzel dough, all that comes from high gluten flour. So if you want to use winter wheat in order to make those kinds of products, so you'll add in gluten. So from summer, that was extracted from summer wheat. So is that gluten considered to be sort of extra outside the shear and only added in, and only being added in later, and therefore doesn't count towards the shear or not? That's a big question. It's a question, but truth is, it's not going to be very practical because this is really only a factory thing. I mean, when you go to the store and buy flour, there's really only one option. It's called all-purpose flour, right? All-purpose flour is really a mixture of all sorts of different flours. The specific flour is based on the time of the year, and these kinds of things are really only bought by bakeries, like when they have like specific measures that they use. It's really not used for at home, and bakeries that are doing this stuff are making massive amounts anyways, and therefore it's not going to be subject to these minute details. But anyways, the mixture of, right, what counts and what doesn't count, so it is a interesting thing to figure out, but I'm not sure, but practically speaking, it's not really going to come up on a regular basis.
So just to understand that you have this like regular flour that was made from wheat, and then you took challah from it, and then you had whole wheat flour that you mixed.
No, the whole wheat and wheat is the same min, right? In Sif Beis is talking about dividing up the five minim, right? The barley, wheat, spelt, oats, and rye. That's different than in Sif Gimel. Sif Gimel is talking about the different parts of the wheat. So the whole, if you mix whole wheat and regular wheat, right, that's the same, it's just the same wheat, right? That's not the question. The question there is only if the parts of the whole wheat that you don't necessarily like, does that count towards the measure or not?
Right? So, but I'm trying to understand the argument why you need to take more if it's whole wheat.
Because the extra stuff in the whole wheat, the bran, maybe shouldn't count towards the shear, particularly nowadays when it is extracted and then put back in, which okay. Apparently is the way modern whole wheat is made. But I don't know. I'm just a food service guy. I don't know the ins and outs of bakery creation yet. We'll maybe one day. All right, fine. So here's your call. Alfie's Gimel. I think this might be moving on to Shin Chafei after this. But all right. Anyways, Yasher Koach, and we'll pick up in Yirsa Hashem next week.
Good night. Thank you.
Yeah.